At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Petrified Podcast. I am your host, Damian Martinez, here with my co-host,
Eric Lover.
And thank y'all so much for tuning in. Hope everybody has had a great week so far. Hope you enjoyed last week's episode. And if you didn't, then why are you here? No, thank y'all so much for tuning in, guys. We appreciate y'all listening. This week, Weapons was just recently released on the 8th, and we went to go watch it. And it was actually really, really good.
Yeah.
It was, yeah. I enjoyed it.
Better than expected. I can't really say that. It was a lot better than a lot of the stuff I've watched lately.
Yeah, it was a breath of fresh air, I would say, with some of the newer movies that have come out.
And coming from a major studio, I definitely have to say it was one of the better releases of the year thus far.
Yeah, so far, yeah. We still got a long way to go. There's a lot coming out this month, too, so we'll see what, you know, there's still a lot to watch. But yes, this movie, directed by Zach Cregger, who also did Barbarian, which I didn't know this. There's no, like, physical copy of Barbarian.
Yeah.
And he's tried to, like, get one out.
Well, that's kind of what they were trying to do with this one. That's what they were trying to do with Weapons. You know, there was, like, that huge bidding war. And they were trying to make it like a Netflix exclusive or Paramount.
Yeah, they were going to do... Netflix offered a lot more money to actually have this on their, you know, streaming service. But with New Line Cinema, it was like, no, we got New Line Cinema. We're good. Like, it'll be a theatrical release. And then, you know, hopefully maybe some physical copies. Because, yeah, I did not know that. I mean, of course, I've only seen it streaming. But,
yeah.
And I've never went out to seek it or buy it. But yeah, I was reading when I was doing research on some of this stuff. I was like, oh, dude, there's no physical. I don't think I've seen a physical copy of Barbarian out there. And watching interviews too with him, yeah, he was like, I tried. You know, I'm trying to. I've tried so hard.
Trying to get my work out there.
But which is crazy. You would think there would be.
Yeah, you would think, especially with the resurgence of physical media right now.
Yeah,
with everyone going back to how, you know, I mean. Shoot, Terrifier 3, I bought it on VHS.
Yeah, I bought it on DVD.
Yeah.
Not 4K or anything, just DVD.
Yeah.
I feel like, personally, I mean, with physical media, 4K is too much for me. Not saying, like, I know people prefer 4K, but I think when you have, like, just a regular standard DVD, it kind of gives it that more grainy look, looks less quality, I guess you could say.
Yeah. It's like listening to music on vinyl.
Yeah,
it doesn't have like that refined remastered CD.
Yeah,
you know, like Dark Side of the Moon on vinyl compared to Dark Side of the Moon remastered on a compact disc.
Oh yeah,
yeah. No.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, the only thing I'd probably buy in 4K was like Long Legs, just because I was trying to look for those devils in the in the background. But it's because it's so dark.
Yeah, you're like lighting it up.
Yeah,
you're watching like the whole Alien vs. Predator thing. Like I see everything.
Oh yeah, exactly. But yeah. This movie just came out, and it's really good. It's kind of how I explained it after the movies when we were talking about it was kind of like Pulp Fiction-esque. You know, you kind of get different point of views of all the characters, and then at the end it all comes together, and you get this one, you know, big piece of work. You know, you get every piece of puzzle, and you see the piece of puzzle, and then it comes together, and you have like a giant conclusion. Which was pretty epic, actually.
Yeah.
It's a pretty epic ending. Yeah, starring Julia Garner as Justine and Josh Brolin as Archer. It's pretty much, you know, one day these kids go missing from this class. And, of course, Justine is blamed for it because she is the only one left, along with his little boy, Alex. And, of course, you know, as a parent, you get very emotional. It's your kid.
Yeah, and they're not going to blame the kid, obviously. Yeah, you're not gonna
blame the kid.
They're going to look at that teacher. That teacher had to do something.
Yeah, even though everything was going normal throughout the year, but you never know. You never know what goes on in the classroom, and they were just like, no, it's her. It's
well, they later reveal that, like, she had some things going on before that. Like, I mean, personal issues, like, you know, like drunk driving charges and stuff. You know, yeah, nothing big. But it's a small enough town, it appears to me at least, that somebody probably knew when she came into town that she kind of had a past.
Yeah.
Plus, she's a single woman, so she kind of got cast as a pariah already.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it only took, you know, it only took one little incident. I mean, not like 70 kids missing, it's a little incident, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, she was demonized really quick.
Yeah.
Riding witch on her car. And,
yeah.
Yeah, stuff like that. Yeah, this movie was, man, it had me thinking a lot of stuff. There's a lot of stuff in the background. In the background, not really, but just the stuff to pay attention to, like just like little things here and there. Some stuff that we brought up before the podcast that we were talking about is a lot of these characters are kind of portraying like some of the seven deadly sins that, you know, we didn't notice. Well, I didn't notice when I was first watching the movie, but after reviewing it with you, it was like, oh yeah, that's right. They're, you know, so if you haven't seen the movie, go check it out before you listen. And if you don't care, well, here comes some spoilers. Yeah. So yeah, like we were talking about some of the people in the movie, as they're going through their kind of routine, the days after these kids disappear, Justine really wants answers. You know, why was she the only one left, and why was Alex the only one left? Like, you know, you have questions. Like, all your students go missing except for one. You know, and then everybody's like demonizing you, so you want to know like why. And they tell her like, hey, you don't need to. She wants to talk to Alex so bad, but it's like, dude, you already have like the media, you have the parents like breathing down your neck.
You have like the FBI. I mean,
yeah, pretty much.
There's like a complete like statewide investigation.
Yeah.
And yeah, she did kind of, I mean, in my opinion, she did kind of take it kind of far.
Yeah, she shouldn't have. So she follows Alex to his house.
But not only that, she's boozing. Like she is literally like drinking.
Yeah.
While she's following this kid around, like I mean, she's drinking like full like, you know, liters of vodka. So I mean, you got to be in your right mind. You can't just go following kids like all tipsy off the Belvedere.
That's another thing, dude, is like, okay, if these parents think already like that you are responsible for the disappearance of their children, why are you going to hang outside the school and just, like, watch him? Or, like, park on the side of the road and watch him walk home? Like, yeah, just, like, if somebody catches you, it's like, yeah, I knew it. I knew you were, you know, I knew you were up to something. I know it's your fault. Like, why add to your, you know, to the bad rap that you have already? But she does.
Oh, she takes it to a whole another level. She, like, bad rep is just, I don't know, that's her cup of tea. Because, yeah, she does, you know, it basically, as you progress through her storyboard, her storyline, it shows that, you know, she at one time had a relation with the local PD officer, Paul. Yeah. So, you know, when everything goes down, she's kind of like crossing lines and she goes to the police station to kind of get some more information.
Yeah.
Well, she sees Paul and Paul and her kind of wave.
Yeah, because somebody had written witch on the side of her car.
Yeah, she had written, you know, somebody had wrote witch. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, she waves kind of at Paul. Paul kind of waves back half-heartedly. And later that night, they meet up at a bar. And
he's sober. He's supposed to be sober.
Yeah, he looks like he's, like, going through the 12 steps. She is just zooted. She's just gone. She's been drinking all day. So she's there. And she's kind of, like, pressuring him. It's, like, some, like, hardcore peer pressure, which is funny because in the beginning of the film, she wears a button that says, like, don't bully.
Yeah.
But she's, like, a bully. She's, like, bullying him, like, oh, you don't want just one drink? And, like, get a drink. She's even bullying the bartender.
Yeah.
And so,
oh, yeah, she's being, like, rude to the bartender. Oh,
absolutely. I wouldn't treat my bartender like that. Not if I was, like, an alky. Yeah. I'd be all cool. But, you know, I'm not her. So, you know, Paul orders a Coke, to which he Coke shames him, like, a Coke? Oh, want some Jack in that Coke? Kind of, and it's like, no. So, obviously, They're together, and then, you know, lo and behold,
she ends up
fast forward 20 seconds later, and she's waking him up in bed.
Yeah.
And
she's dropping him off. He's all hungover, has to go back on his shift. It's like, dude, come on, man. You knew the, like, okay, obviously they have history together, but, dude, you're not going to, you know, why are you going to go back with her? You know how she is. You know how she gets when she drinks. Not only that, he had, like, a pretty, like, wife or girlfriend or whatever she is. Like, it's not like he was doing bad for himself. But, I mean, I guess, you know.
But even he's lying. I mean, he's being deceitful because when she asked at the bar, I mean, you can only blame her for so much because literally he, like, he's telling her that they're taking time off. No, they weren't taking time off. Turns out Donna, his girlfriend, is on a business trip.
Yeah, and she follows her into the liquor store, like, later on. And
yeah, she
about to beat her with the liquor bottle.
Yeah, Justine drops Paul off at work and then proceeds to go to the liquor store because she's got to stay sauced all day.
Yeah.
And Donna, literally, you just see this character in, like, a red sweater stomping.
I thought it was going to be a parent. I thought it was going to be a parent that was going to follow her into the store and, like, beat the crap out of her.
I thought it was going to be the lady from the school board meeting that was just, like, demanding answers as to, you know, demanding answers as to her accountability for the situation.
Yeah.
But no, lo and behold, it's just Donna ready to put the smackdown on her because, you know, she slept with her man.
Yeah. And she even tells her, she's like, I thought y'all were not together. I thought y'all were on a break. Well, he lied to you.
That's what you get for thinking.
Yeah. I mean, come on, man. Like, but hey, that's what alcohol does.
Yeah.
Put you in bad situations. But yeah, you go through Justine's storyline. You see what goes on in her life, her watching Alex, going to the house of where Alex stays, and her trying to figure out, like, what's going on in there. She just sees that the windows are all taped up and
newspaper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Calls the principal. It's like, tell him, like, you need to check into it. And he's like, dude, just leave it. Like, leave it be. Like, what are you going to do? Like, what, you know, you're not going to do anything. You can't do anything. What can you do? But I also understand from her point of view, you feel kind of, like, helpless.
Yeah.
You want answers. Obviously, while the parents, yes, are, you know, obviously they want their children. They want to know what happened to their missing children. Because one night they just woke up at 2:17 and walked out the door running Naruto style down the street.
Yep.
You know, so it's like, you know, they want answers. Like, all they have is footage from their, like, their ring doorbells and stuff like that. Like, dude, like, my kid just walked off into the dark and there's no answers. So, you know, you got to pinpoint it on somebody. So you pinpoint it on the one person that was left in the classroom, which was the teacher, even though there was another little boy. But you're not, like you said, you're not going to blame the kid.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, but I understand where she's coming from. So you get all these people, like, on you. You get the media constantly asking you questions, detectives constantly asking you questions, parents berating you and, you know, terrorizing you pretty much. And, you know, somebody writes witch in red paint on your car. So, like, yeah, I understand. Like, dude, I want to solve this just as much as them because I want them, like, off my ass already.
Yeah, I want a normal life.
Because you go from like, man, because she obviously loves her students too. But, like, it goes from that to being like, okay, dude, I love my students, but I love me more. And these freaking parents will not, like, get off my ass. So I understand where she's coming from.
I kind of would, in all honesty, I kind of would back away from the situation because
let it cool down a bit.
Well, you got to realize. So let's just to say that she found the kids. Right? So you go and you find the kids. All they're going to say is, the reason you found the kids so damn fast is because you knew where the kids were.
Yeah.
Because you did it, witch woman. And then, you know.
True, yeah.
Next thing you know, you're back on the stake, you know. Yeah. Like, I might do a little footwork, you know, like James the crackhead who comes out later. Yeah. You know, I might do some footwork and then just randomly place a call. Like, hey, you know, hey, Officer Paul. You might want to look at this house right here and then back up off of it.
Yeah.
Because you don't want your name affiliated with it because, like I said, the first thing everybody's going to look at, if you find it, they're going to be looking exactly at you.
Of course you did.
Yeah, of course you did. We looked everywhere. FBI looked. Everybody came to town. All these agencies were on top of this case. And you mysteriously, little Miss Teacher, you found out what's... Nah.
Yeah.
Not me.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah. But I also understand where she's coming from.
Oh, I understand. Yeah, I mean, well, she cared about the kids. So, you know, I mean,
yeah.
you're not going to teach a whole bunch of third graders or whatever grade they were in unless you care about kids. Yeah.
But I like the mystery of it. You know, one day these kids just walk out into the darkness and there's nothing, you know, to be said about them.
Yeah.
And we get into Archer's timeline, played by Josh Brolin, who's obviously he misses his son.
Yeah, he's the father of a child named Matthew, one of the 17 that went missing.
Yeah. And so he, you know, he sleeps in his bed, in his son's bed, because, I mean, obviously you're missing him. And he wants answers, so he keeps, you know, you know, demanding for answers, trying to keep updated with the police department, which I get. But at the end of the day, the chief finally, like, is like, dude, like, you are going to get as much information out of it as we are. Like, that's it. You're not going to.
You're not even going to get as much information.
Yeah, you're not going to get it.
You're Joe Public. You're a citizen.
Yeah.
Like, we're not going to call you into our briefings when we're like, hey, FBI, let's go set up a raid at something.
Yeah.
Like, you're not going to get that kind of intel. You're going to be on the back burner.
Yeah. But he keeps watching his, you know. Oh, and then they keep having nightmares. So Justine, you know, she has a nightmare. She sees, like, you know,
this clowny.
The kids in the classroom, and one of them has, like, this, yeah, clowny makeup look on his face and wakes her up. And then when she looks up at her ceiling, she sees this old, hideous woman with, like, I mean, it's just, like, clown makeup on, pretty much. It's not clown makeup. It's, like, it's one of those, like, when those old ladies do their own makeup and they just, like, I mean, they paint their face because they don't want to look
old.
Yeah,
when they dye their hair like Annie red and it's like your skin is like translucent. I can see every like blue vein. Like, it's just some creepy stuff.
Yeah.
And so you can tell underneath that mop top, she's bald. Bald as a coot. You know, it's just, it's crazy.
But she sees her in the middle of the night and then, you know, obviously it was a dream. But, you know, Archer, he sees it too. He gets the, because he's so worried about his kid, want to know where he's at. His dream is, you know, him seeing his kid walk out the front door, and he follows the kid to a house. And so he's like, okay, well, you know, what's in the house? But above the house in his dream, it's like real dark. It's at night.
Is it like a thundercloud?
Yeah. And there's
it looks like an M16.
It looks like an M16. And has the time that they all left, 2:17.
Like on a digital analog clock.
Kinda. Yeah, so he goes in, and that's when he, you know, sees his son laying in bed. But when the light flashes, it's the old lady.
Yeah.
She's looking at him. But she was creepy, man. She looked real.
She reminded me of the sister kind of from Pet Sematary.
Yeah.
Like had that, you know, when she has a spinal bifida or whatever.
Yeah.
And she's like all distorted upstairs, and they've got to like feed her like the soup.
Kind of like that.
Yeah.
It was.
Except with like bad makeup, like old 70s clothes.
It was. Ah, dude. Yeah, she's just creepy, man. Yeah.
She reminds me of some people that used to come into the job you and I used to share. Like, there are some people like that. And like,
unfortunately, yes. Yeah. Just age gracefully, you know? You don't have to just age gracefully.
Hell no, dude. I'm going to be some suspenders, you know, high riser pants.
Oh, geez.
All day, dude. No way. But there's not going to be like periwinkle blue with a chartreuse top.
Oh, dude. Yeah. She was caked up in the face.
Oh, she was
bad. It was bad. Yeah. So when he wakes up, you know, he's like his kid, the video of his kid walking out their front door from the Ring doorbell camera. So he decides to do some, you know, detective work. He works on homes. He builds homes. He's a contractor.
So he pulls out like the whole diagram for the subdivision.
Yeah.
He's got all, I mean, obviously he has access to all that.
Yeah.
So
he pretty much like triangulates, you know, tries to pinpoint where his son was headed. And then he goes to another, you know, kid, you know, another family that their kid was missing.
And Archer does not take no for an answer.
No, he does.
that was probably the funniest part of the movie. So he goes up to the house and he asks the wife, you know, can I see your Ring doorbell camera video?
She says,
and she's no. Yeah. So he just parks at the house and just waits it out. Then the husband comes home, and I think he kind of like sweated the husband.
Yeah,
because which is
played by Justin Long.
Yeah, who was also in Barbarian.
Yes, he was also in Barbarian, which is sad because in a lot of these horror movies, he gets the shit end of the stick.
Yeah.
But luckily this one, he's just
cameo. He didn't. Yeah. So he waits for him, and then he's like, hey, can I see your video? And, dude, you know that guy was just in the doghouse for, like, the next
six months. Well, did he just, like, rushed out to
him? Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. You know he was intimidated because, you know, Josh Brolin's a pretty good-sized guy.
And he, you could tell that, you know, Archer had military, some sort of military training. I mean, you don't just see the M16 in your brain, you know, in your mind, in your dreams. You know, and then he had, like you pointed out before the podcast, he had an anchor tattoo.
Yeah, he had an anchor tattoo on the... on his left bicep. Yeah. So.
I mean, unless he's Popeye the Sailor Man.
Popeye the Slayer Man. It's another day.
Then, you know, he's, you know, he has some kind of military experience.
Well, plus everything, you know, triangulating, you know.
Yeah, he triangulates.
The diagram. Yeah. And then basically, I mean, even the reference weapons.
Yeah.
He's the one who coins the phrase. He said that the children, you know, due to the fact
yeah,
that.
And he only comes up with that because he confronts. You know, obviously, during the freaking conference, he's like, you know, wanting freaking what's her name, Justine, to like tell us the truth. You know, so when he kind of, I don't know, just comes out of nowhere at a gas station and he, you know, wants to talk to her, and it seems like he was starting to understand stuff, and but the way he approached her was kind of weird. You know, it's like he wanted to apologize, but he didn't. But he meets her at a gas station while she's pumping gas. They're kind of going back and forth. And then the freaking principal comes running out of nowhere.
His eyes are all bugged
out. Dude, yeah.
That was creepy. That was great, actually. That probably was one of the best parts of the movie with, you know, that principal with the eyes bugged out.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, you get a taste of it.
Yeah.
It's already disturbing enough. And then later in the movie... there's like a whole scenario that goes into play, and you're just like, yeah, this is good.
Yeah. Yeah, he goes and he's trying to attack Justine. Archer tries to help. Dude, the freaking guy in the store doesn't even like call the police or anything.
Dude, that's society right now. I mean, if you look at it, dude, people are getting like beat. Like, look at that, all that stuff that happened in Cincinnati. All those people were getting beat, like, at that jazz festival or whatever.
I didn't even hear about it.
Oh, needless to say, there was, like, an incident at a jazz festival in Cincinnati. A whole bunch of people got beat, and it ended up being, like, this mob that attacked. And literally, like, there were over 100-some-odd people on the street. There were no calls to 911.
Oh, wow.
Not a single one. And, I mean, these people were, like, getting their heads stomped in. Like, the lady was, like, concussed for some, like, god-awful period, like, 3 days.
Jeez.
Yeah. People don't dial 911 anymore. They pull out their phone and record.
Yeah. I guess you're right,
So, yeah, of course, obviously. That guy probably doesn't. He owns a liquor store in the neighborhood or a mini mart. He doesn't want any problems with the neighborhood. He's like, oh, that guy comes in all the time. Yeah. You know? That's Mr. Lee. He buys, like, you know, $40 worth of stuff for me every week. So.
Yeah, he, yeah, the principal was...
He was bug-eyed. Like you said, you know, you could really tell by that, you know, Archer didn't back down from that. He was very defensive, and he definitely...
Yeah, he kept knocking him down, like, beating the crap out of him.
Throwing him into coolers, like, just busting that man up. And, yeah, but, you know, the principal just kept going and going. So. Yeah.
Yeah, that was wild. But, you know, Justine takes off because, you know, yeah, what are you going to do? But he goes after her, like running after her.
Yeah.
And it was like there was a beacon on her and he knew where she was at. So Archer follows him and unfortunately he gets hit by because he's just like literally like a heat seeking missile.
So he's just running down the street crazily. And Archer was speeding up. It looked like Archer was going to mow him down.
Yeah.
And it looked like he was just like, dude, because, I mean, all this stuff is happening in this relatively small town.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, Indianapolis or something.
It's not like a very, you know, urban community. You know, it's like just like a little.
And all this stuff happens and there's no cops nowhere. Paul's out doing something else.
Oh, there's cops, but they're.
Well, But, you know, and then after, obviously, the principal gets mowed down in the street, then you chime into the story of Officer Paul.
Oh, gee, Paul.
And Officer Paul, basically, his story kind of, like, intertwines.
You start to see kind of the reflections of how all their stories kind of intertwine.
Yeah, because his picks up, and as where, you know, the Archer Justine story kind of get interwoven. pretty much Paul's side character is James, the drug addict. So they have an on-again, off-again relationship.
Yeah.
So Paul's driving down.
And he catches him breaking in.
He catches him trying to break into something. And then, you know, James starts giving him, the rigmarole. Oh, man, I work there. And my phone didn't have any charge. I had no battery.
Yeah.
So I had to try and break in because I can't be late for my shift. So Paul's just like, man, this is a crock of crap.
So he's just, I mean, he's doing normal routine.
He's doing the normal pat down. Hey, you know,
he was being nice to James. I will say that. He was being nice at first to James.
But I don't know where Paul got his training, but like it wasn't efficient enough.
Well, you got to remember, he's sobering up, from drinking alcohol. So he's probably like fiending for another sip.
But he was cognitive enough to ask James. So he's patting James down. And he's like, like they ask you when you get patted down. If you've never been patted down, they ask you, do you have any, knives, weapons, anything that's going to stick me or poke me?
Yeah.
That's pretty much 101.
Yeah.
So he poses that question. Of course, James is like coming down. So he's like, no. Yeah, right. So that's when I would be like, oh, man. Like, if you're in a small enough town, it's not like you deal with 50, 60 junkies a day. You're dealing with, like, maybe 5 junkies.
Yeah.
That being said, he reaches into the pocket, boink, gets poked. That's when the fear kicks in.
Yeah.
And, like, all the realization flushes, and he's like, oh, damn. Like, I could have AIDS. And he and Donna, his girlfriend, are talking about having children.
Yeah.
So I think he is very concerned that he's going to take something home. And then due to the fact that he's out canoodling with other people, she's probably going to be like, you got AIDS from somebody else. And you're trying to, you're going to say it's a junkie needle.
But I also, I guess play devil's advocate, I guess. Dude, if I ask you, like, hey, is anything going to, yes, you are a junkie. Like, okay, I understand that. We've assessed that you are a junkie. But if I ask you, hey, you have anything in your pockets that's going to, like, poke me, stick me, or hurt me in any kind of way, and you say no, and then I stick my hand in your pocket to check you, and a needle pokes me, I'm going to get upset. Especially when it's like something foreign,
Yeah.
I don't know what you got, man. I don't know. I don't even know if you use this needle yet.
Yeah.
So I would be pretty upset. However, at the same time,
he body rocks James.
Dude, he pops him in the side of the head. I mean, hard.
He busted his whole gorilla. He just, he smacked him in the side
open-handed, but still. Yeah, he pimp slapped
him. Yeah. It's like one of those smack championships you watch the little reels on.
Yeah, he hits the crap out of him, man. I get the frustration, but at the same time, dude, you are a cop. No, he didn't have a partner either. I'm surprised. None of these cops, like, have partners or anything like that.
They're all hanging out back at the office. You saw that. True that, they're all chilling.
Chilling, busting each other's balls.
Yeah.
But, yeah, dude, he checks to make sure everything's okay. He's pretty pissed off, but he realizes that his dash cam was recording.
Yeah, so he unplugs that with the quickness.
Yeah.
And then that's when you realize that Paul's girlfriend, Donna, her dad is the chief of police.
Yeah.
And so he rushes back, and he's, quick to tell his
story. He lets James go, by the way. He's like, hey, you did me wrong, I did you wrong.
Yeah, he's like, hey, man.
I would say it's fair. Yeah. You told me a lie, and I got stuck. I popped you in the face when I shouldn't have.
It's fair when it's not on body camera.
Yeah, it's fair.
The current climate is not going to allow you to just rock somebody in the eyeball.
Gentleman's agreement, he lets him go.
Yeah, exactly. Handshake. My hand shaking the side of your head.
So, anyways, he lets James go, at least. I'll give him that.
Yeah.
So
that James can go out.
You try to better it as much as you can. But, at that point, it's like, dude, you got caught.
Yeah.
But they try to cover it up,
Yeah. Like, hey. He basically says, the chief of police tells him, hey, listen, if this guy doesn't come forward, doesn't say anything, makes no peep, the hard drive basically records over itself every 30 days.
Yeah.
So you'll be in the clear if you can make it the 30 days. But if he comes in within the 30 days, you're done
screwed,
for.
Yeah.
So then James is like, oh, man, my life is, or not James,
Paul.
He's like, my life is, it could be over. I could be looking at a lot of bad stuff here. I mean, my girl caught me cheating with my ex. My father-in-law is knowing that I'm messing up at work. So I've got to be on the straight and narrow. So he goes to walk out of the station, and he's like, yeah, you know, I can make it these 30 days. I know that's what he's thinking. I can make it 30 days. This junkie's not going to come in and report anything. He looks across the street,
and there
lo and behold, who's headed towards the police station? But James.
Dude, I mean, but we find out why James is walking back. He chases him. His story ends there. Paul's story pretty much ends right there. And then we get to James, and you kind of see what he goes through. Just kind
of. James is just hustling. He's just, you know, he's trying to make a dollar out of 15 cents.
He's, you know, he's doing what, I mean, I've seen it before. You know, you walk around and you
look for unlocked cars.
Yeah, you pull door handles, see if anything's open. You're not trying to hurt anybody. You just need some stuff to pawn off so you can get some money, get your next fix. So that's what he's doing. Unfortunately, one of the cars is open. And a poor little girl lost her iPad and her headphones. Yeah, her kitty
headphones.
Looks like Hello Kitty headphones. He tries to pawn it off, but he doesn't get anything from it. But yeah, you just pretty much, like, you're just watching his daily routine.
Yeah.
Of him, like, you know, trying to pawn
stuff. Wandering around, going back to his camp, calling his parents, calling his dad, obviously, to try and get some money to buy clothes because he got a job. And mom won't give him any money for clothes. So he needs to call dad because in order to start the shift, he needs clothes.
Yeah,
which obviously is a fictitious lie.
Yeah, if you know any kind of, you know, anybody who's been addicted, you know, it's just lies. That's all it is, you know.
Probably get 20 of those calls a day.
Oh, like, man, that's poor parents. Yeah. But yeah, so he doesn't. Well, he breaks into one of the houses happens to be. Alex's house.
The house with the newspaper on the window.
All the newspapers on the window, so he breaks in. Not even, like, quietly either. He just freaking...
He is, like, the worst. So he goes to see if any windows are open on the ground floor. Ground floor is sealed. Yeah. It's secure. So he climbs up, like, a TV antenna on the backside of the house, up to the second story. And he gets up into a window in the second floor, opens it up, and just basically, like, jumps in and knocks over a whole bunch of crap.
Yeah.
There's like an ironing board. He's not a smooth criminal.
Yeah.
So then he obviously goes to a room and he finds a pillowcase.
We later find out that stuff, that room that James broke into is the most likely the master bedroom.
Yeah.
With all the junk from the basement in there.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. Which, we'll find out later why.
That's yeah.
Right. Yeah.
It's and just, so he jumps into this room and he's, you know, wandering around. So he goes and he grabs a pillowcase.
Yeah. It starts.
And he's looking for stuff to, like, steal. It looked like he had a hard time upstairs. Like, he wasn't coming up with anything.
Yeah, but downstairs, you got the kitchen, you got silverware.
But it's so weird, like, once you find out really what's going on in this movie, it's so weird considering what's upstairs that he doesn't find anything upstairs.
Yeah.
Because the majority of the living that's being done at this house at this time are the two bedrooms at either end of the hall.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but so anyways, he goes downstairs. He's going to the kitchen. He's stealing the good silver. Then he goes into the living room.
Finds an old game station.
He finds, like, an old game station and a copy of Willow, which he's stoked as hell that he found, like, the, you know, the Ron Howard directed, starring Warwick Davis, Willow.
Yeah, which is a little, like,
kind of... It's kind of a precursor. It doesn't really say anything, but we'll talk about that later in the...
Yeah, so, he's just... You know, he's pawning stuff off, or he's getting stuff to pawn off. There's two people sitting there in the living room. Yeah,
he turns around, and there's two basic catatonic people sitting on a couch.
Yeah. They're not moving. They're not saying anything.
And Justine, when she was looking around the house, she had kind of seen that same silhouettes through the window.
Yeah.
But obviously, she wasn't able to make that out, that they were really, like, catatonic people. So he freaks out, and he starts, oh, man, damn, I'm sorry. Oh, I didn't mean to steal your... And then he realizes, these fools are catatonic. They're not going to do anything. They're, like, stiff as a board.
Probably thinks they're dead, you know. So
he
takes all their stuff, and, you know, when he's going to walk out, he goes by the basement door, decides to check down there for stuff, because, you know, you can never have too much stuff to pawn off. Lo and behold, he finds all the kids down in the basement.
Yep.
And... when he sees that, then he realizes it's time to go. He gets out of there, goes to the pawn shop. You know, he needs to get his fix, dude. He ain't worried about no kids.
Well, remember, he gets chased out. Because
They get chased out. The two
catatonic people get chased. They chase him out.
Yeah.
And he runs out, and he goes to the pawn shop. Well, now, you know, he's making big bucks. He's making, you know, you know, $100.
Yeah.
And when he was first there and he got turned away with the iPad and the Hello Kitty earphones, he looked up and he saw that there was a $50,000 reward for
anybody who any finds information the kids, yeah.
regarding the 17 kids. Well, now he's there and the guy obviously taking longer because now he's giving him business.
Yeah.
So the guy's actually counting him out money and weighing the silver. He looks up and he sees the $50,000 payday right there on the poster. And he's like, I just saw these kids.
And so that's why he goes to the police station.
he tries to call at first. And then they're kind of like, no, we're not just going to meet you with a $50,000 check. You kind of have to get the authorities involved. And he's like, oh, well, I don't really get along with cops or whatever. But lo and behold, hey, man, that hunger, that craving, that's going to drag you in. So it drags him to the police station. And right at that moment when he turns that corner to go make that report to tell them I found, you know, the 17 kids, bam. Who's there? Officer Paul.
Yep, chases him down.
And he chases him down.
To his tent, which is weird because when James is running back to his tent, that's out in, like, in the woods, he sees the old lady. He sees her waving at him.
Yeah, the same old lady that, you know, Justine and Archer have seen in their dreams.
Yeah, but he's seeing him. Yeah.
Like, she's out there in the woods just chilling.
So he panics and he hides in his tent.
Yeah, like that's...
Footsteps come to his tent, and he stabs the person, and it's Paul.
Yeah, he opens up the zipper, because he runs from Paul.
Yeah.
Then he hides. He sees the old lady. He hides in the tent. And now he's got, like, a whole handful of needles.
Yeah, three punches. Three. Yeah.
So Paul unzips the front of the tent and catches three syringes right to the left side of his face. Yeah. And, yeah, let's just say Paul's not happy about the situation. Yeah.
I thought Paul was going to... You know, blast him, man. But he didn't.
He didn't. I mean, well, he's already up, you know, he's up the creek already. He's not going to, like, push the situation.
True. Yeah.
So he throws him in the back of the car. And, of course, James is like, man, I know where the kids are. So Paul's like, well, where are the kids? And he's like, man, I can take you to where the kids are.
Yeah. So they go. And they're talking about getting the 50 grand.
Yeah.
And Paul does not say anything to him, and he's like, so how does it work, man? Do y'all just give me a check, whatever?
Yeah.
Paul closes the door on him after he pulls up, and he's like, oh, dude, he's going to take it from himself.
He knows. He knows he's not going to get paid. So Paul walks up to the house, and the door mysteriously opens like it does. Paul walks in, and then the sun goes down. It's like 3-4 hours later.
Dude, yeah, he's like left out
there. And
here's
James out in the back of the cop car still handcuffed behind his back, and you think Paul's inside like making the deal of the century.
And Paul comes out, rushes the cop car. You could tell something's wrong with him, too, and pulls James out and drags him inside
the house.
Drags
him back inside.
And that's the end of Paul.
And now all stories intersect, just like the homing beacon.
Yeah. Well, you got the principal, too. You got Marcus.
Yeah.
And
Marcus is like a sub-character, well, but it's so
but
strange.
That was a cool thing, and I never noticed it when we were talking about it. When we were watching the movie, I didn't even notice it either, but... When Justine calls him about Alex and his house to talk about, you know, how weird his house was, because obviously there's freaking newspapers all over the windows to keep the light from coming in, stuff like that. He's like at the store, so you're seeing his point of view now.
Yeah, he's grocery store, shopping he's grocery with his shopping. Partner.
Yeah, and it's like him and his husband and... You know, I never noticed it, but yeah, when we were talking about before, is a lot of these characters, they kind of symbolize something. Symbolizes
like wrath,
like the seven deadly sins.
Yeah, lust, wrath, envy. Yeah. It's kind of like all kind of bundled up.
Yeah, and a lot of the characters that have these nightmares or are tied to kind of the disappearances of the children. They all have something in common. And when we're, you know, her being like, you know, she has a past. She's got stuff on her mind. Same thing with, you know, Archer.
James, Paul, all of them. They all have something.
Yeah.
And then we pulled in, you know, they pulled in the principal. And that was one thing, like, I kept thinking about that last night. We were talking about that before we started recording.
Yeah, because
He's living like the charmed life.
Yeah, he's got
he
a husband.
He has like a perfect husband.
Yeah.
He's got the big house. He's the school principal. He's, you know, he's what you would call successful.
He's got a nice house. He's doing fine.
So as they're walking around and he's actually talking to Justine on the phone, about, you know, how weird Alex's house is.
Yeah.
Like, the partner, everything is, like, processed junk food. Yeah. The partner holds up two bags of Pepperidge Farm cookies. And so
he went with Tahoe's. Come on, man.
Yeah, and he, like, pointed at it, and, like, they throw it in the thing. Then he goes over, and he's got, like, Fruity Pebbles and, like...
But they're two different varieties.
Yeah.
It wasn't the OG ones.
No, it was, like, Fruity Pebbles and, like, Tropical Fruity Pebbles or something. Yeah,
it was Fruity Pebbles and marshmallows.
Yeah. And so he points at one of those. And it's all, like, stuff that you, like, shouldn't eat. Like, yeah. I mean, you can eat in moderation.
Yeah, and then back home, you know, it kind of flashes forward or flashes to when he meets, you know, they want to talk to Alex. You know, Justine is obviously pressing Marcus, the principal, to... You know, she wants to talk to Alex, and he's like, no. So he's like, well, let me just call, like, him and his parents in, like, to
talk to him. Yeah, because he had met his parents earlier.
Yeah,
so.
But it's not his dad or his mom. It's the aunt. And that's the old lady that you see in their nightmares, and it's her. But she's very nice. She's very like, oh, you know, I'm here visiting. His parents, Alex's parents, are very sick, and
they have consumption.
Yeah, they have consumption.
They have a mild case of consumption.
Yeah, we're on the Oregon Trail.
Yeah, and yeah, he blasts off with that. I was like, that's great. Yeah, he just chimes in. He's like, I've never heard of that. He's like, it's like we're like on the Oregon Trail, and I was just like, wow.
Yeah, yeah. So she tells him that. So, but he, you know, she's like, you know, just. Being very nice, you know, being very friendly, being weird. Yeah. Don't get me wrong, it is weird. Like, how come his parents aren't here, but you're here? But he tells him, like, I can't talk to you. I have to talk to one of the parents. And so she's like, okay. So she leaves. And back at the house, you know, after they're done, did their shopping and all that. And he spoke with the aunt. You know, they're about to... You know, they're about to watch some TV. They're about to eat a meal. And
they're watching ants eat each other.
Oh, yeah, they're okay, so that's another thing, yeah. Too. There's a lot of things. So when Justine has her dream, she has her dream where she goes back to the classroom, and all her children are there, and they have their heads down on their desk. And in the back on the white or the chalkboard,
yeah.
It's talking about parasites and different parasites. When Marcus is watching TV, it's about... A parasite
attacking, yeah. Like a group of ants. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's a lot of like infestation stuff. Yeah. Like a lot of that. Like pretty much things that will kind of use something else to kind of gain something, pretty much. You know, using ants as a home or whatever. And then when Archer has his dream, he sees the AIM-16. So that's how he concludes the weapons. Pretty much using something as a weapon.
Yeah.
And, yeah, dude, that, yeah. So anyways, but they have this giant tray
of hot dogs and
chips and
chocolate chip cookies on the end.
Yeah.
And they're just getting ready to sit down and watch, you know, like Nat Geo or whatever. And lo and behold, there's a knock at the door.
Yeah. And it's her.
And yeah. Aunt Gladys. Yeah. And Aunt Gladys is out there. And by this time, Marcus is just like, dude. Like, it's a Saturday.
Dude, I'm sorry, dude. Okay, I don't care who you... My wife would never be like, oh, yeah, come in.
But she's hamming it up.
I guess you're right.
She's like, I'm an old lady. I walk, like, 17 miles because I missed my bus, blah, blah. Every excuse in the book. And, I mean, she already looks sickly. So what...
True.
I mean, honestly, like, if... I mean, just my personal thing, if you show up at my house with a wig telling me some kind of story, it's my day off... Dude, you better be wearing Kevlar body armor or something, because, like, yeah, no, you're not coming around my pad.
Yeah,
no,
true,
but,
yeah.
You know, but I understand why, you know, devil's advocate again. I understand why they let her in.
Yeah.
So she's like, can I have a glass of water?
His husband.
Yeah, the husband lets her in. And then, you know, she gets in, and it just, you know, gradually becomes more weird. They're like, you know, so Marcus is like, would you like a glass of water? And she's like, oh, no, I want a bowl of water. I've become accustomed to drinking out of a bowl. And by this point, he's just like,
and he's like, no. And then his husband's like, no, yeah, get her a bowl of water. And he's like, all right, I'll just get her a bowl.
So he gets her a bowl of water, obviously, and she, you know, reaches into her bag. There are multiple different things.
And you start to realize that it's witchcraft.
Yeah.
I started to put it too. I was like, oh, okay, she's the one.
She pulls out scissors. She has basically like a piece of a thorn. And then she walks over to the husband and she promptly cuts a lock of his hair off.
Yeah.
And then wraps it all around the barbed thorns.
Yeah. Puts her blood on it.
Yeah.
And when she snaps it,
she weaponizes him.
Yeah, she weaponizes him. So Marcus goes after his own husband, chokes him out, and then headbutts him.
Yeah. Like, just literally, like, pulverizes his whole head. Just
yeah.
Totally offs him.
Yeah. And she also has a lock of Justine's hair, because when Justine was
sleeping in the car out in front of Alex's house,
yeah.
She went out to the car.
Or she sent one of her weapons out to the car.
Yeah.
And cut her hair while she was drunk, asleep, you know, in a drunken stupor.
Well, the weird part about it is, if you watch that part, if you look at where Justine was sleeping, if you look at where Justine was parked, that street is a T intersection.
Yeah.
So the street goes east to west, and then the northbound lane essentially ends at the house. She was parked in front of the house in the street, which means that while she was passed out, pissed drunk, nobody could go up and down that street.
True.
And I was like, what the heck? And yeah, that baffled me.
Well, she was parked on the side. She was in the shoulder.
I don't think she was on the side. She was like right there in front of the house.
Oh, no. Yeah. She was right like on the...
She was on the house, like right on the curb. So I don't know. I mean...
Yeah. Well, anyways, one of her minions...
Yeah.
Goes out there and...
Gets in the back seat, and then the scissors appear and cuts a lock of her hair off.
Yeah. And, yeah, that's how she has Justine's hair.
Yeah, that's how she weaponizes...
Dude, him headbutting his husband, like, multiple times, and you see, like, his...
There's not even a head left.
Dude, it's his just skull, like, just starts caving in.
Yeah.
It's like, wow.
It gets, like, flat, you know, like a squished grape, and just...
And his eyes start bugging out.
Yeah.
And then she does the same thing with... you know, Justine's hair, and then when she snaps it, he goes after her.
Yep. And then, of course, everybody's story all joins together.
Yeah.
And then we get to the last remaining character that you need to explain, and that's Alex.
Yeah. So you see Alex. He had a normal... I mean, he had a mom and dad. He was fine.
He had a normal household relationship.
Yeah, he got bullied a lot.
He got bullied at school a lot. Yeah. So it was like...
I was starting to think that, you know, he got bullied so much by all of his, you know, classmates that, you know, he decided to, you know, tell his aunt to kind of put them under a spell or whatever. That wasn't the case, unfortunately.
I thought maybe he had learned the dark arts through through his auntie.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
That's what I thought. I thought that basically, like, she came... He saw the power that she exuded, and he was like, man, I need this.
Yeah.
But lo and behold, that was not the case.
No, that wasn't the case. He was having a normal life, and his parents even say, you know, their aunt, you know, his mom's aunt.
That was a whole weird situation. Like, she got sick. She contacted the aunt, Gladys. Mom hadn't seen her in 15 years.
Yeah.
And she's like, I don't have any other family members left.
Yeah, so she goes like, yeah, I'll
can stay with us.
You can stay with us. So they go. They invite her in. She comes in. She's sick. She's dying of something.
Consumption.
consumption is what she's dying of. No, most likely like cancer or something probably.
Yeah.
But she's dying. And, you know, one day Alex wakes up and his parents are, or he comes home from school. And his parents are, like, they're in their catatonic state at the dinner table. And that's when kind of Gladys shows, like, what
true colors.
Yeah. That what her powers are, pretty much. That she's pretty much a witch. And she pretty much can do whatever, like, with anybody. And she shows that if he tells anybody about her or his parents, she snaps the twig and they start, like, stabbing themselves with forks.
Yeah.
She pretty much tells, dude, and she's talking to a little kid. She's like, you know.
She has no respecter of age.
No, she's just like, if you tell anybody, I will make your parents hurt themselves even worse or make them hurt each other. She goes, hell, I can make them eat each other if I wanted to. And I'm like, geez, dude, like, one, this is your niece, too. Like, his mom is her niece. She just does not care. It's pretty much because she wants power. She wants some, like, youth or whatever. So finally, after a while, just kind of living, you know, with this, you know, evil woman in his house, he has to feed his mom and dad so they don't die. He has to, you know, do pretty much fend for himself because
he has to go shopping every day and get them soup It's like he can't buy a surplus of soup. He has to buy it daily.
Yeah.
And so he's just basically become like an indentured servant.
Yeah.
He's there just to serve the needs, and his life has become hellish.
Yeah.
So finally, Gladys, in her evil disposition, poses kind of, you know, a devil's offer. And she's like, hey, you know.
Well, he goes, you know, what can make you feel better?
Yeah, what's going to make you feel. I was amazed that even, like, that kid was concerned enough.
He wasn't concerned. He was just like, dude, how do I get this girl, this lady out of my house?
Yeah, but he was playing it quite well. I mean, you kind of got the feel that he was kind of like concerned, because he's like, what would make you feel better, Aunt Gladys? And she's like, more souls.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, you kind of figured that she's kind of feeding off of the parents.
Yeah.
Like a parasite, you know, to stay young or to stay youthful and energetic. And, you know, the parents weren't doing it. And so he's like, well, what would you need? And she's like, you know, probably your classmates. Like, why don't you bring me something, something from them, of each of them, bring it to me, and, you know, then I'll probably feel better. He goes, and then you'll go home? Like, that's what he wants. Yeah. He wants her to go home. And she's like,
and then she reads that immediately. She's like, yeah, if you do that, then I'll go home.
Yeah. And,
she lied.
She lied, of course, but... You know, he takes their cubby stickers that they each made personally for their own cubby. He takes all their stickers and takes it to Aunt Gladys, and that's when, you know, she makes a concoction, like a bowl of something, and lights it on fire. And then when she rings the bell, that's when all the kids at 217 kind of come out. And
converge and like a homie begin and go right to, you know, Alex's house.
Yeah.
So they stand on the porch and just basically, like, you know, usher everything in. You know,
yeah. So they
bring the sheep to the slaughter.
Yeah, and he has to feed the kids too. That's another thing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the whole point. Like, he literally just he just made more work for himself. Yeah. He had to feed two people and watch them. I guess, you know, technically, like, a lot of his classmates were kind of like jerks to him.
Yeah.
So he probably, I mean, obviously, like, he probably felt kind of crappy about it, but he was probably like, dude. Now I gotta feed all 17 of y'all. I don't even really like you.
Yeah.
Like, and you're all living in my house? Like, it was bad enough when the old witch was living down the hallway. Mom and Dad were down in the kitchen stabbing their faces with forks. And I had to feed them twice a day. And now, like, I've got 17 more people.
Yeah.
19 people I'm taking care of.
The people that would have bullied me, if it was me, I'd be like, you know what? You don't get soup today, you little asshole. You dropped my books in the hallway.
That would have been Matthew, man. That was Archer's.
Oh, yeah. That's the thing is Matthew was the one bullying Alex, and now Alex is taking care of him.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and that's Archer's son, who, you know, basically, like, one of the main characters.
Yeah.
Mm. So, lo and behold, it all culminates, and you're like, okay, so now I see what's going on. The old witch, all this comes together, and...
You get Paul walking in, and Alex sees him in there, and finally, you know, Gladys is like, hey, we're done here. Like, I got the kids. It's time to go. She even tells Alex, pack your bags. We're leaving.
Yeah.
So she's taking him with him. Like, no, you're my servant now. Like, you are going to serve me.
You're my crony.
Yeah. And after the attack of Marcus I keep forgetting her name. Oh my gosh, freaking homegirl.
Justine,
oh my gosh.
So Justine and Archer are now riding together, basically.
Yeah, well, he shows her, like, hey, like, here's the triangulation.
Yeah, he shows her the blueprints, the maps, the schematics for the, you know, the subdivision.
Yeah.
And they've got it.
Yeah, and he's like, you know.
But he doesn't know where it leads.
No, but Justine does.
But Justine's like, that's right by Alex's house. So they rally in the car and go to Alex's house.
Yeah, and go to kind of stake it out, see what's going on.
And then, of course, the cops are already parked out front because, you know, Officer Paul's been there with his good buddy James for, like, hours.
And so he comes out, which is weird. Like, they don't notice, like, his body movement is kind of weird, you know?
No, he just walks out and he kind of, like... He waves, kind of underhandedly waving.
Yeah.
He's
like, come in.
Come on.
Yeah.
And then he turns around and walks in, like, slow and kind of stumbly.
Yeah. So they follow him in. And what's crazy is that it is very militaristic, the way she does everything. She has the parents as bodyguards in front of her door. with a salt, a line salt.
She has like triple lines. Yeah, with lines of salt everywhere. Yeah,
and she tells Alex, like, hey, don't cross the line. So he doesn't. And then when they walk in, Justine
breaks the salt line.
And that's when they start going.
Then the parents just automatically at that point, the parents are boom, beaconed
in. The parents don't move. The parents are to watch her door.
Oh, that's right. The parents watch
James
her door.
And Paul James are the and ones. Paul, yeah. They go freaking off.
Yeah.
So they're starting to fight Archer and Justine. They're going at it. Oh, dude. And then he has her like pinned in the kitchen, like choking her. And she grabs the freaking
service revolver.
The freaking
she grabs a potato peeler
the
first.
Potato peeler, man.
She takes two big pieces of beef jerky off the side of his face.
Oh, dude.
Yeah.
He doesn't feel it. Obviously, he's under control, but. Yeah, he's like, oh, dude, she's just freaking peeling it. And, of course, you know, he's a cop. He has a gun.
Yeah.
So she grabs it and ends up killing.
Waste him.
Yeah. And, of course, James and Archer are going at it.
Yeah, Archer's getting beat down by, you know, James the junkie, man.
And he keeps, they keep going at it. Finally, he ends up, like, getting him. But Alex, obviously, he wants it to end. So he goes to his parents, their line, their salt line. And he steps over it, and they go after him, trying to kill him. And they're bug-eyed, too. Everybody's bug-eyed who's under control.
Yeah.
But you kind of see how she does. She has, like, this – it looks like just, like, a thorn kind of bush or something like that.
Yeah, it looks like Wolfsbane or something with, like, the – it's just, you know, there's no foliage to it at all.
No, it's just thorns.
It's just, like, a giant thorn bush. It's just – yeah.
Yeah, so she takes off breaks off a branch, ties whatever, you know, belonging.
Personal effect is on there. Yeah,
puts her blood on there and snaps it, and that's how she gets people under her control. So she had one sticked in the ground for, who was it? It was for, she gets Archer.
Yeah.
Yeah, so she does Archer. He goes down there and pretty much grabs Justine.
Yeah,
and
he starts
her.
Choking Justine out.
Yeah. So she goes downstairs and kind of tells her, like, everything, like, you know, you're not going to pretty much stop me. Like, we're done. But Alex is up there in her room now.
Yeah.
And he finds one for all the kids. It's a big old twig, and it has each one of strands of their hair. So he grabs it. He's seen her do this, like, a dozen times with other people. So he follows the same steps, you know, pricks his finger, you know.
Witchcraft is not this easy. There's a little bit more commitment. You kind of have to, you know, you kind of have to lend yourself to the dark arts.
Yeah.
You know,
he kind of does to, like, you know, save his parents and save the kids and save everybody else, his teacher. So he does the same thing that his aunt does. And when he snaps it, all the kids.
The kids weaponize.
But she feels it.
Yeah.
She feels it. Because, like, she's most likely feeding off of them.
Yeah, she's getting all the juju out of them.
Yeah.
So.
And all the kids go after her. So she's running. This is, like, the funniest scene. She's, like, running away from all these kids, and they're breaking through houses and stuff like that. She's using doors and stuff, and they're just breaking through everything. And they finally catch her in somebody's front lawn. It's unfortunate.
They completely dismember her,
dude,
too.
They dismember her.
That was the greatest part. Like, they tore her leg off. I mean, there's not much of her to begin with.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they just tore this old, like, sickly invalid up.
Yeah, and when they tear her head off, that's when everybody kind of wakes up from their spell.
Yeah.
Except for Paul. Because Paul's dead.
Hey, Paul and James are dead. Rest in peace.
How did James die?
James got killed. He got shot. Remember, he was coming after Archer because Archer was downstairs looking for Matthew.
Oh, and yeah, that's right. Yeah, he gets popped in the head.
Justine... Dumb
pieces. That's
right.
After
right
she kills Paul.
She's like, dude, I don't care no more.
I forgot about that.
Like, I'm done dealing with you people.
Yeah. So,
which is crazy because you look at it like, seriously, like the only people who really got smoked in the whole film is, you know, Marcus and his husband.
Yeah.
You know, Paul and James.
Wow. Yeah. They made an unfortunate end. Yeah. Marcus gets run over.
Yeah.
He gets hit. And his husband dies by his headbutt.
Yeah, yeah.
But everything's better now. All the kids are kind of like standing around her body, and it's over. Like, but like, you know,
they get clarity, but they don't like regain like normality.
Yeah.
They get clarity, like they obviously are no longer under this, you know, this catatonic state.
But they're traumatized.
Yeah, they're emotional wrecks.
Yeah, they don't speak for a while. Some of them did start to speak, but pretty much the narrator says, you know.
But here's what's really weird about what we're getting at with this. So obviously Alex's parents spark back to life. Now they don't, you know, they're still catatonic. They're just not under the spell.
Yeah.
So they're kind of doing it from like a narrator standpoint where they're talking about Alex's family.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, you know, on this case, you know, they went through and, you know, they went to go, essentially they went to an insane asylum.
Yeah,
they were institutionalized.
Yeah, I mean,
they never returned back to normal. So Alex is taken and he has to go live with his aunt. What aunt was this that couldn't have taken crazy Aunt Gladys?
No, he went to go live with another family. He pretty much got adopted out.
Oh, it said his aunt. His aunt. It said his aunt.
I swear she said another nice lady.
No, I could swear it said aunt.
I'll find out again because I'm watching.
Yeah, we'll find it again. Yeah, you're watching it again this weekend.
Yeah.
But yeah, I could swear it said aunt. And then I'm like, why couldn't this aunt take crazy Aunt Gladys?
Yeah.
Why did he get caught?
I swear a nice lady, but we'll see.
Could have been. Because I know his parents.
Because I got the idea that he was adopted out. Like, he had to be kind of taken in by another family because, obviously, his parents were no more.
And nobody talks about what happened to Justine.
Well, she probably just returned back to normal. Like, you know, they found out, you know, Archer knows now. He can defend her. You know, he has his kid back. And, you know, she can return to teaching. And
yeah.
Except for the principal. The principal.
The gluttons. You know, the Marcus the glutton. He's gone.
He's gone. James
his husband, the provider, is gone.
James the greedy one.
Yeah.
He's gone. Yeah.
With his junky type ways.
Yeah. Paul.
Lustful Paul.
Lustful and wrathful.
Angry.
Angry
police officer.
Yeah, they were all.
Defund Paul, people. Defund Paul.
Yeah, Paul was.
Yeah.
He was like. He was like kind of like a crackhead, dude. He was sweating the whole time.
He was an angry person. He was angry. He was coming down. You know. I'm not claiming, blanket alcoholism is like a good thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, maybe that was using to take the edge off of his life. And yeah, I mean, he just seemed like for someone who was, you know, in that position, he was very angry.
Yeah.
I don't think I'd want him walking the beat in my neighborhood.
No, he doesn't need to be a cop. He needs to be
a crossing guard.
He needs to be a boxer or something. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he was very angry. He shouldn't have. Yeah. No. Yeah, I mean, that was Weapons, and it was really good. I liked how they did everything. Obviously, there was more that we, you know, kind of skipped over. You know, we don't want to talk about the whole, I mean, we talked about the whole movie, but, you know.
There's a lot to it. You know, I read a lot about, you know, the situation, and a lot of people talked about a lot of holes, you know, like a lot of plot holes, and how basically, you know, just really truthfully, like a lot of stuff that people shouldn't take things into their own interpretation. It's a movie.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like a book. You know, you get out of it what you get out of it.
Yeah.
And so, like, yeah, with interpretation as far as that goes, I know a lot of people slammed it for the fact of the plot holes. They were saying that there were, you know, like a lot of reviews just said that there were a lot of holes and they caught up with things. And they didn't explain a lot of stuff. And, you know, but once again, that's their interpretation of the storyline. As if they're a plot hole.
I was going to say, I think everything went pretty well.
I think everything went very well. I liked more than anything, kind of like what you referenced at the beginning. I liked the fact that it had that Pulp Fiction feel.
Yeah.
It had the, this is this person's take on it. And, you know, this is what Marcus got out of this story.
Yeah.
This is what Alex got out of this. This is, you know, and everything kind of combined at the end to make everything jive.
Yeah. But see, I don't look at too many reviews because, I don't know, I feel like it kind of taints my taste a little bit for the movie. So I kind of stopped.
I look at reviews and what other people think afterwards because, you know, I like to see if, you know, like my thoughts and processes are well established or if I'm just going off the deep end with some. Like, honestly, like the whole, you know, the whole Marcus thing, no lie, like I told you, I was in bed. I was trying to figure out how Marcus fit into the whole equation.
Yeah.
Because he seemed to be an anomaly. Everything in his life was going fine. Everything was going well. He wasn't like a drug addict. He wasn't, you know, and he didn't have anger issues. He was a very well-established character. And then it turned out, I was like, man, what does this guy have? Then I started noticing the, you know, the tendencies of the food.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, when Aunt Gladys is in his office, like I said, he's sitting there eating a whole jar of M&Ms.
Or jelly beans is what it was.
Jelly beans or M&Ms. I couldn't, you know, I didn't really pay too much attention. I just know he was eating. And almost every time that you see him in the movie, he's eating. Until he gets weaponized and then he's just on a rampage.
Yeah.
But I was like, wait a minute. He's gluttony. Like he's gluttony. That's what his deal is. They're eating like a whole tray of hot dogs, you know, cookies, chips.
Yeah.
Like two boxes. Like to hell with that. I want two packs of cookies, two boxes of cereal. And like I said, it was all like, you know, like uber high preservative based food.
Yeah.
Which is not a bad thing. If that's what you can afford, that's what you can afford. But you can make better choices if you're eating preservative. You know,
yeah, he's food. A principal. He's making, I mean, yeah. Obviously he has a nice house, so he has, you know, he can afford other stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But yeah, it was like, you know, it was all up to, you know, it's all up to interpretation. And so, you know, I definitely got a lot out of the movie. I love the fact, like I said, that it was multiple different storylines existing in one single time.
The Willow reference.
Yeah, the Willow reference where essentially, you know, the old lady does, you know, she definitely... So Queen Bardmore is in Willow, and she's obviously the evil witch.
Yeah.
That's trying to kill Willow through the whole movie. And the fact that Willow has the wand and, you know, it comes into play, kind of like the thorns on her head and the fact that she looked emaciated and sickly through the whole movie.
Yeah.
So does Aunt Gladys. I was like, you know, they don't reference that at any point. It's just something that I kind of put together.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't mean that it's like lore or, you know, it's canon.
No, it could just be a reference point.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Let's throw Willow out there.
Yeah.
You can find worse movies to reference in a movie than Willow.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but I did enjoy this movie, like I said, compared to, you know, obviously, I for me, you know, Julia Garner, she kind of, you know, she redeemed herself. I'm not going off on another Wolfman tangent, people, but literally, like, Julia Garner, she kind of did redeem herself in this movie.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it wasn't her fault in Wolfman. It was just the writing of
her character. Yeah, it was poor writing, yeah. You know.
You know, so, I mean, yeah, it's weapons, you know, it did, you know.
But, unfortunately, you get typecast. I mean, that is there. You know, if you do have a bad role... You know, just like if you're a jerk to a customer at work,
yeah.
If that customer sees you, they're going to be like, dude, that guy's a jerk.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got to redeem yourself. This was her redeeming moment, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So, you know, so if I see another movie, I'm not going to be skeptical because you and I talked about this before we went to go see it. I texted you. I was like, dude, it better not be another Wolfman performance from her.
And it wasn't. It was very good. Yeah.
It was.
I did a lot.
This movie's definitely worth going to see. You know, it's definitely kind of a breath of fresh air. Like I said, the past couple major studio releases that I've seen have been kind of disappointing. You know, that's why we kind of backed off of it a little bit. But
this one's definitely worth. Yeah, some old ones. Did a little bit of, you know, local lore. Did some, you know, kind of, you know, foreign films and stuff like that. You know, just to kind of refuel the tank a little bit.
Absolutely. Yeah, we were ready for another, you know.
Yeah, because we knew this month is going to be, you know, packed with some stuff. So,
yeah,
you know, we'll have a whole lot of content for you coming up. So,
Toxie's coming.
Yeah. Will it be like the original? Probably not. Obviously.
Probably not. No. But man, come on. It's,
you got to get close to it though. They got to get close.
I don't even think they're going to get close to it. I think they've just like, I think they've adapted and built on it so much. I mean, come on. You've got like, it's like A-list. Nobody knew anybody in the original Toxic Avenger.
True.
And you can name me, I mean, you know, obviously, except for, you know, Toxie himself, who you know, we met, you know, last year. If anybody can name any player in the Toxic Avenger movie, not their name in the movie, but their actual name, no, it's not going to happen. So.
Yeah, they got a lot in there, so we'll see how that goes. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff. stuff coming up. So
Mark Togel is probably the only person in Toxic Avenger, and Lloyd Kaufman and Mark Togel are probably the only two people from the original that you can, you know.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. So.
Oh, I'm very excited for it.
We'll see what happens. Yeah. We got a lot coming up. So but thank you guys so much, guys, for listening. We hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you have any comments, any way you would like us to do this podcast, I mean, this, you know, we're going along. We're doing it for y'all. We work for y'all, pretty much.
Pretty much, yeah.
And so, you know, let us know how we're doing. You know, leave a comment, drop a line.
Like or subscribe.
What you like, what you hate.
Yeah.
And, yeah, we'll see y'all
next week.